Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
Every 2 years, since 1977, Willamette Week has evaluated Salem lawmakers in a big cover package that, unlike the majority of the paper's reporting, relies on the anonymous gossip and opinions of Senate and House staffers, Capitol lobbyists, and observers in the know. This year's analysis, as our cover package's author and today's guest, Nigel Jaquist, puts it, can be summarized in one word. Yeah! It's Saturday, June 24th, and this is episode 129 of The Dive. In this week's cover package, 41 area lawmakers are given one of five grades: excellent, good, average, bad, or awful. And while the majority of those surveyed shook out as average, very few were deemed excellent. And there were even a couple of awfuls. Nigel will break down his integrity, brains, effectiveness rubric in just one sec. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Sophie Peel reports, new state rules are making sure that businesses structured similarly to LaMota, the embattled dispensary chain, meet new tax compliance requirements. Each person with a 20% or more ownership stake in a dispensary must obtain a certificate of tax compliance from the state and present it to the OLCC to obtain or renew a license. To put it more simply, because the rules are written to include tax compliance by nested LLCs, it will be difficult for someone, like Aaron Mitchell, co-founder of LaMota, for example, to form several LLCs and thus avoid complying with the tax rules. Lucas Manfield reports that the Oregon Department of Justice is scrambling to save the state's civil forfeiture laws after the State Court of Appeals all but ruled them unconstitutional earlier this year. Civil forfeiture states that police can seize not only cash from cars, but real estate. Cheryl Lynn Sublett, a 66-year-old military veteran who pleaded guilty to delivery of methamphetamine, was sentenced to 72 months in prison and lost her lone remaining asset, her house. Sublett appealed, arguing that the seizure was both disproportionate and unconstitutional. The Court of Appeals ignored the question of proportionality and focused on whether Oregon's civil forfeiture laws were constitutional to begin with. And hey, I'm not just a weed wizard. I'm also a certified roller girl. And this week, rather than my usual Potlander cannabis column, I instead shared some of my own and some crowdsourced favorite roller skating spots to groove around this summer. All abilities welcome. Now, let's chat with Nigel Jaquist about his cover package: the good, the bad, and the awful. What rubric do you use to evaluate everybody?
Well, we send out a survey form. It's an Excel spreadsheet, and it has three categories: brains, integrity, and effectiveness. And so we ask, we send those forms to registered lobbyists and to legislative staff, and we ask them to rank on a scale of 1 to 10 each legislator in the metro area on those three categories, and we take an average of those three categories to get an overall score. We also ask the people, the respondents, to explain their scores with comments or amplify them with comments, and that's an attempt to humanize and personalize those numbers. And the comments range all over the place from brilliantly analytical, funny, hithy, to completely useless or inconsistent with scores. And so, you know, the rating part, the numerical part, is the easier part. Trying to connect comments to the ratings is a little more complicated.
And these are anonymous responses, right?
That's correct. So normally at Willamette Week, we don't like to use anonymous quotes and only do so in rare and necessary situations. We suspend the rules for this issue. We've been doing it since 1977. What we found is that because legislators wield tremendous power over lobbyists and staff, you're not going to get lobbyists and staff to speak candidly about them unless you grant them anonymity. So every 2 years, we suspend our normal rules and we print an edition that, as it says in the introduction, is full of opinion and gossip. And those are two things that we normally try to avoid, but make an exception for in this case.
Was there like an emotional through line with all of these responses? Is there like an air of hopelessness or frustration or hopefulness?
I think there is always a level of both. I think people are always hopeful. It's easier to be hopeful this year because for a couple of reasons. One is there's a lot of new blood in the building. There are more new legislators than we've ever seen before. There are more people of color and women than we've ever had in the building before. That's really positive. There's new leadership. First time in 20 years, we have a new Senate president. First time in a decade, we have a new House speaker. So I think with change comes optimism that things could be different, things could be better. Mm-hmm. So that's the good side. The frustration, much of it lay with the fact that Republican senators walked out on May 3rd and didn't come back until June 14th. Or 15th, I forget. They were out for a month and a half. That caused a lot of frustration because that means bills don't move. And, you know, there's a lot of legislation that is kind of routine, nuts and bolts, stuff that needs to be fixed or tweaked or adjusted, or people have discovered a problem that everybody agrees on both sides of the aisle is a problem and it needs a legislative fix. That's most of legislation that passes. So you were having these bills that were not objectionable to either side that were stalled because of the walkout, and that caused a lot of frustration. So I think those are the two big through lines, the newness and the excitement about the newness and the frustration that the process was completely halted or almost completely halted for 43 days.
Yeah. So of the 41 graded lawmakers, only three earned a mark of excellent. So what makes Representatives Dasha Graber and Ben Bauman and Senate Majority Leader Kate Lieber such standouts?
I think if there were a commonality between the three of them, they're very different people, of course, but it's that they understand the process, which is important because, like anything, there's some skill involved. It's that they are energetic, that they can be partisan without being overly partisan. So all three of them, I think, have shown an ability and a desire to work with a diverse group of people and to understand that legislating is all about compromise. And it's all about kind of understanding that to be successful, you can't just steamroller people. You have to understand that others in your own party and in the other party need to get something too. So I think that's the common, that's the common themes around what makes a good legislator.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any like big power players emerge here? I know we've talked before about Tina Kotek and how she kind of had this like steamrolling kind of MO. Mm-hmm. Are any attitudes like that emerging from this crop?
It's too soon to say that there are two, you know, there's a presiding officer in each chamber. The Senate president is in our survey, Rob Wagner from Lake Oswego. The House Speaker, Dan Rayfield from Corvallis, is outside of the metro area, so he's not in our survey. But if you were to ask me what's the most surprising thing in the survey, in many ways, the most surprising thing in the survey is that Rob Wagner scored so low. He's down in the low sixes, which made him average. He was narrowly escaped being labeled bad. That's surprising because he is the most powerful legislator in Salem. And normally, if you look at other presiding officers, Kotek was always near the top. We see Kate Lieber, who's the number two senator at the top of the Senate ranking. So, and Elizabeth Steiner, who's the co-chair of Ways and Means, and therefore probably the third most powerful senator, is right near the top. So usually with power come high rankings. Senator Wagner, he's pretty new to the legislature. He was appointed 5 years ago. For him to go from an appointment, which means he didn't have to win his seat originally, to being Senate president in 5 years is a remarkable achievement. I think that maybe he's gotten there without having perfected the skills or, polished the skills that a legislative leader needs. And so there were a lot of negative comments, a lot of pretty low scores for him. And so that's to me the biggest surprise. And, that you asked about, do these leaders steamroll like Kotek did, or do they wield an iron fist like Kotek did? And, for him, not so much. He won a hotly contested secret election to become Senate president. Those elections take place behind closed doors, and details are not meant to be shared with the public, but at least one, and I believe actually several of his colleagues thought that they would be better at the job than he was. So he had to preside over a caucus in which he's younger than most of his colleagues, in which several of them thought they would be better suited for the job than him. And he had to deal with the Republican counterpart, Senate Minority Leader Tim Knope from Bend, who before the session even started basically threw down a gauntlet and said, this guy's not qualified to be Senate president and I'm going to make his life miserable. And guess what? He did.
He did. So in the case of lawmakers that are scoring in the average or the bad, is it ineptitude, or is it these bad scores are because they're being held back from doing anything?
I think that, of course, in any human endeavor, there's going to be a curve of some kind, and only a few can be excellent or good, and the most people are average, and some are really bad. I think that there's a kind of a recipe to being a good legislator. You have to be able to absorb a lot of information very quickly. You have to understand what is possible, and then sort of the thing that really separates the average, the good and the excellent from the average, is being able to convince a colleague or figure out a way to convince an opponent to support you. And so that therein lies the secret sauce of legislating, is how do you get somebody to do something they didn't already want to do? And sometimes it means trading a vote. Sometimes it means agreeing to support a bill you don't really support. Sometimes it means amending a bill so that it is less than you want it to be, but is now palatable to people who oppose it. So, we all want what we want when we want it. Being a legislator is the ultimate in understanding that you can't always get what you want. And so trying to mediate between, it's the art of the possible, I guess. And so, I think we tend to judge those legislators who get done more of what they want as the most successful. And so it's like anything else in life. It's sort of a mixture of those three things: brains, integrity, and effectiveness.
Mm-hmm. So mostly average. We're all mostly average.
We're all mostly average.
Yeah. But there were a few good grades. Michael Denbrow, Daniel Wen, Tana Sanchez, a handful of others. They seemed like they were ranking just below excellent, or just below excellent. But mostly everybody shook out as average. Do you see a lot of mediocrity, or do you see some promise? Were there any standouts among the average?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. You mentioned Michael Denbrow, who came in, I think, the second highest score in the Senate. He's a classic example of a guy who came into the legislature 15 years ago. He was a professor at Portland Community College. He was a union guy, but not a, hadn't been an elected official before. And every session, he's gotten a little bit better. He's gotten a little bit better at understanding how to work the building and how to get done things that are important to him. And I think that he's also had staying power. You know, not many legislators stick around for 15 years. So I think in the, you know, there are people like Mark Meek, who is a senator in his first term from Gladstone, who served a couple of terms in the House, and he started off with pretty low scores. And every session, he gets a little bit better. He is a kind of classic example of a plow horse rather than a show horse. He learns the process, he learns the issues, he learns how to work with his colleagues. And so I think that, you know, we've seen people move up. Representative Thomas Sanchez from Portland started out lower and has worked her way into now being co-chair of Ways and Means, which writes the budget, which means she's very powerful. And she is a great example of a legislator who never asks for attention or calls attention to herself. She's quiet. She just kind of puts her head down and does her job. And she's really learned how to work. She's really learned how to work the levers of power. And in politics, the levers of power are the budget. And so she, you know, she holds the state's checkbook in her hand. And so that, I think that's what you want to see, is people who come to Salem like Sanchez did, because she wants to do things and she comes for the right reasons. And she's not somebody who's looking to run for higher office. She's looking to make the state operate better and to use its resources more efficiently. And a lot of the people who are, I would say, in the average category, you know, they display those kinds of attributes. They tend to start slowly, because it's like jumping into the deep end of the ocean. It's a big deal. I mean, if you spend a day down there and you think about what they're really doing, they are just, you know, they're every single day they're drinking from a fire hose. And it's easy to belittle the legislature, as it is with Congress, when you try and understand, try and stand in their shoes and look at all that they have to deal with and all they have to try and understand. It's a daunting job, and it takes, like any job, you know, we have a citizen legislature in Oregon. And the idea of that is that normal people should be making laws for the rest of us. Well, the truth is, you know, it's a $30 billion general fund budget with multiples of that when you consider all funds, all sources of funding. It's, you know, there are 4,000 bills that are introduced every session. So it's a very complex, very difficult job that we expect people to do for $34,000 a year while they're trying to, you know, commute to Salem, keep their day job from evaporating, and, you know, often work with people who vehemently disagree with them. Mm-hmm. It's really hard.
What's the average length of a tenure? How long
I would say, you know, that's a great question. I would say probably two or three terms. What we've seen lately, we saw three House Democrats this past year. Karen Power, who was one of the very best legislators in our last Good, Bad, and Awful survey. Karen Power was from Milwaukee. Anna Williams from Hood River, and Rachel Prusak from West Lynn. They were three experienced Democrats, each of whom had displayed, you know, some real talent and dedication to the process, each of whom had served more than one term. And they all said, hey, we just, you know, we're in our, I think they're all probably in their 40, early 40s. We can't make a living. We can't support our families. We can't do the things we need to do for $34,000 a year. So they all left. Part of the reason that this year's new class is so big is I think people are realizing the legislature used to meet for 6 months in every odd number of year. Then a decade ago or so, they said, oh, we need to do more than that. We'll meet for 35 days in an even number of year. Then they said, we need to do more than that. We need to meet every quarter for 3 or 4 days. It's kind of become a full-time job.
Yeah.
And it does pay very, very poorly. And it's a disgrace that we pay our legislators so little and ask so much of them.
Mm-hmm. And is everyone there just because it's, this is their entry point into greater offices?
You know, why people run for office remains an enduring mystery, because it doesn't pay much. Mm-hmm. In many cases, it's very obscure. I remember talking to a legislator in inner southeast Portland who was a person of great promise, who also left because the pay was too low. And he said to me, you know, I go knock on people's doors and they basically don't know what the legislature is. They don't know that there's a difference between the House and the Senate. They don't know who I am. I've been representing them for two or three terms. So it's not a job that you get into for the fame or the acclaim or the praise. You know, I think that of the 90 members of the legislature, probably 85 of them are there because they really believe in the concept that a citizen legislator can make the state a better place. Five of them are probably there because they are desperate for higher office and see that as a logical starting point. But for the most part, these people know that, you know, they might move from the House to the Senate, but that's going to be it. So they're there for the right reasons.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Nigel Jaquess, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, bye!